This is The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media. I'm Mary Hartnett. This week was a turning point for the Roman Catholic Church as Pope Francis ended a Vatican meeting on clerical sexual abuse by calling for a quote-unquote all-out battle against the abuse of minors and insisting that the church needed to protect children from, quote, ravenous wolves. Despite the Pope's vow to, as he put it, combat the evil that strikes at the very heart of our mission, some critics said the speech was short on details, and that's what's demanded by many Catholics around the world. Francis had barely finished speaking before some abuse victims and other frustrated faithful began expressing their outrage and disappointment at the Pope's failure to outline immediate and concrete steps to deal with the problem. The Catholic Diocese of Sioux City tried to take some of those steps this week. The diocese named 28 priests who have been credibly accused of sexual abuse of minors from 1948 to 1995. Most of the priests are now dead. The diocesan board reviewed all of the allegations of sexual abuse of minors, and Bishop R. Walker Nicholas accepted them. At a press conference on Monday, Bishop Nicholas added that no one on the list was allowed to work with young people anymore, and their names have been submitted to authorities, although they have not necessarily been charged or convicted in a criminal case.
All cases have been referred to proper authorities. No one on the list is currently involved in ministry or with work of any youth, nor will they be permitted to do so.
Bishop Nicholas said publishing the list is the beginning of a new era in the Diocese of Sioux City.
We want to usher in a climate of openness and transparency, resulting in the protection of our youth and accountability for clergy and church leaders. As leaders in faith, we must do everything we can to atone and help remedy our church's sins. But we also are committed to minimizing the chances of this happening again.
The list of accused priests included many from the Siouxland area who worked in the Catholic school system over the years. There were 107 victims of abuse from 1948 to 1995, with an almost equal number of boys and girls involved. The list could grow, and the diocese would like to work with victims to help heal the wounds they've suffered because of the actions of the priests. The release follows an investigation last fall by the Associated Press that exposed the diocese's 32-year cover-up of the Reverend Jerome Coyle, who had allegedly confessed to abusing more than 50 boys. However, Bishop Nicholas said the diocese had been working on the list before that story came out. Storm Lake Police Chief and member of the Diocesan Review Board in these cases, Mark Prosser, said reviewing them and deciding who was on the list was difficult. Prosser said that for an allegation to be really credible, the commission considered any evidence that was available,
including consistency of the testimony of witnesses, accuracy of the details, such as the placement of the accused at the time of the allegation is said to have taken place, and any physical evidence. In addition, the board considered other corroborating evidence from files or other possible witnesses.
Bishop Nicholas ended the press conference with a call out to those who have been abused by priests but have yet to come forward. The bishop said the diocese wanted to try to go ahead with a climate of transparency.
I personally recognize the pain and the trauma of survivors. Like many of you, I feel anger and shame for the church, which I help lead here in Northwest Iowa.
The press conference stirred a number of responses from survivors. The Survivors Network of those abused by priests responded to that list saying, "What ended up being problematic was when lists are released that were incomplete or carefully curated and that leave off the names of extern priests, nuns, deacons, bishops, or other church staff." The group says sometimes names are left off because they don't meet the diocese's ever-changing and what they call nebulous definition of credible. Bill LaHaye of Des Moines agrees with that summing up. He's a member of the Iowa SNAP group and a survivor of clergy sexual abuse. LaHaye says the curated list from the diocese leaves a lot out.
When the church deals with these kinds of things, they tend to try and keep the focus on stuff that happened a long, long time ago, as if to suggest that this is a crisis that's mostly behind us And now that they have, you know, they're working on zero tolerance policies and other stuff, that the future is going to be different, which I believe is true, that the recent past is different than the distant past, which I also believe is true. I don't think, say, in the last 10 to 20 years, I suspect that the levels of abuse or the occurrence in terms of numbers or percentages or however you want to calculate it is probably lower than it was before anybody was talking about this, because the secrecy that it was mired in for decades just fed and allowed it to fester. So, but it doesn't mean that it's not still a problem or it's not going to be a problem. It's just that I think the church is pursuing a very self-interested tactic here, which is to suggest that it's all in the past or it's mostly in the past, to suggest in a way that there's nothing to be done about it now, that there's so many of these abusers are dead, in this case, three-fourths of them. And that the arguments I've heard before, you know, about, well, what can you do? Because even if you could bring these cases to light in the courts, well, you know, witnesses have died or can't remember what they saw, or abuse victims can't recall accurately, you know, from that many years ago what happened, things like that, or the documents, there aren't documents around anymore. And all of these things to me are sort of distractions that take away from the issue.
You say that the witnesses in these cases are a bit of a red herring. What do you mean by that?
These crimes, if you know anything about them, there aren't witnesses. Almost all the time, there are never witnesses, because this is what the crime is about. The crime is about secrecy. It's perpetrated in secrecy, and that's deliberate on the part of the abusers. So to me, they raise the arguments of the witnesses' unreliability or unavailability. It's just another tactic to try and paint a picture that says nothing can be done at this point, and we're really sorry that it happened. It was a shame, and it was other people involved making the decisions, et cetera. So I think it's just problematic that they focus so much still on trying to paint this as something that we need to move on from. And should move on from. So that's one of the issues. The other thing is, you can tell that it's not true by the very recent history that you mentioned from Sioux City, because the last time they were in the news about this was with
Jerome Coyle.
Okay, that the AP, the Associated Press, found out about him and went to the diocese, which admitted. When they were confronted with this, they admitted it. The diocese did not volunteer this to anybody, to my understanding. This was brought to them, and they confirmed that they had recently found out about it. Now, this guy, they admitted to more than 50 victims over the course of 20 years. And I can guarantee you that the last 20 years, the church has been paying attention, and no priest could abuse that many children for 20 years and not have somebody else in the church have some sense or founded suspicions that it was going on.
A couple of the priests I knew from high school and saw them on the list. And anecdotally, when we would talk about at least one of them, it was always just sort of like a wink and a nod that we knew what this guy was like. It's like everybody knew and nobody said anything. Do you think that's the case in a lot of these situations?
Well, the school where I was at, the Catholic, I went to, where my abuse occurred, was at a Catholic first through eighth grade parochial school. And ironically, my abuser was the pastor of the parish, and he was not the one that the rumors circulated around. There was another priest that was there that everybody, all the kids thought was creepy. The kids have pretty good radar about this kind of stuff, I think, although I can tell you that there was never anything my abuser, our pastor, he was not ever discussed, or there was never anything in my experience, where like the other altar boys said something, where other students said something, nothing. This came to me, it came right out of the blue. And I never said anything to anybody during or after my abuse at the time. It's certainly not a fail-safe barometer of whether or not there's an abuser in operating in a church or a parish or a school, but it's true that stuff happens. And when I got the personnel file from the LA Archdiocese, which is where in California where my abuse happened, they had notes in this guy's personnel file about that he was drinking excessively, that he was bringing boys to his bedroom, stuff like that. You know, they knew. And this was back in the 1960s. So the fact that Coyle could be, you know, the likelihood that he was abusing 50 boys, I think they were all boys, if I'm not mistaken, over two decades, and nobody had a clue, is incredible in the literal sense of the word, and that is not to be believed. I do not believe it.
The talk yesterday turned a little bit to reparations for these actions, and when I asked about it, it was answered in a financial way, and you know, a couple of $1 million from the diocese and its insurance, some money from the priests themselves. But I was thinking about sort of overall, you know, emotional reparations, and is there any way that you could ever make this up to someone having done that to them, when, you know, to a child?
Right. Well, there isn't. The short answer is there isn't a way to fix the grief and shame and the other issues that an abuse victim gets saddled with. And the metaphor that I have used when I've talked with other survivor groups, or I've talked to people about my own experience, is that to me, I said, you know, it's like when a child is young, the way I look at it is that we all get a backpack. As we're growing up, people put things in that backpack that we're going to need to live, that we're going to need to thrive, that we're going to need to make the transition to adulthood. And they can be things like a good sense of self-worth and confidence. They can be encouragement for learning. They can be all these things. And what the abuse experience does is that what goes in that backpack instead is not that. It's stones that are marked grief and shame and things like that. And those are what people carry. And the only remedy for that, in my experience, is that survivors, with the help of therapists and supportive people in their lives, that those rocks get pulled out and discarded over a long period of time, and you never get all of them, in my view. So it's true that the emotional legacy of that, the repercussions, those are, you know, to pervert a phrase that shouldn't mean this, they're a gift that keeps on giving. And I will tell you that I've talked to hundreds of other clergy abuse survivors. I've had participated in national conferences and local meetings and other stuff. And the issues that they deal with are very real and very serious. And they can be anything from alcoholism and drug addiction to all kinds of personal emotional dysfunction, dealing with depression and other mental health challenges.
So overall, how do you think the Diocese of Sioux City handled creating this list and putting it out there and letting people know?
It's in their interest to steer this away, or steer it in the direction of, this is awful, like, and nothing can ever compensate for the damages. Nothing can ever repair what has been broken. And on one level, That's very true. On another level, that's a way for, to me, that's a way for the church to try and dodge financial responsibility and the very real costs that most survivors have paid throughout their lives.
That was Bill LaHaye, a survivor of clergy sexual abuse and a spokesman for the Iowa group Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. He lives in Des Moines. As part of its outreach, the Catholic Diocese of Sioux City is holding a special Mass for healing and forgiveness tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at the Cathedral of the Epiphany.